Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. TriStar Movers with 5-star service. We are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry, Caroline Fenton, Adam Vingan, in for Jared Stillman today. And we are joined by Coach Bob Shoup, former defensive coordinator at Vanderbilt, at Tennessee, at South Florida, head coach at Columbia. The resume goes on and on. How are we doing, Coach?
Great. Great to be with you guys.
Appreciate you for joining us. I'll get into it. I mean, the biggest story of the day, obviously, the Titans fire John Robinson in the middle of the season despite a winning record this season, despite a winning record with the Tennessee Titans. Even though the Titans are going to win the division and will make the playoffs, they part ways with John Robinson. What do you think happened? Why is John Robinson no longer the general manager for the Tennessee Titans?
Well, whoever has the ownership's ear certainly got in there and said we have a flawed roster and we need to move in a different direction moving forward. And it's very clear that winning the AFC South isn't the objective. The objective is to compete and win championships. But the question, I think, is whether the move, you know, should have been at December 5th, you know, week 13 of the season, or at the end of the year. And the more and more I think about this, I mean, I'm never for people getting fired or removed in the middle of the season, but there may be people who are thinking, you know, way above what I'm thinking here. Because, you know, the general manager, you're asking about the effect of the remainder of the season. I think if we're a coach, an assistant coach, or a head coach, that has more of an effect on the play on the field. John Robinson's not writing the scripts for practice. He's not putting together the offense or defensive game plan. He assembles the team. Now, there's some things. There were a lot of moves made the day after he was fired, players going from the practice roster being released, bringing in other players from other practice rosters and things like that. But the day-to-day operations of the team are what Mike Vrabel excels at. But the question is whether this was the right move or not. And when Jared reached out and we said this was going to be the topic this week, I did a little bit of thinking about this and I wrote some things down. I mean, since John Robinson's been here, and we know this, the Titans have the 9th best record in all of the NFL. Now, is that good enough or not? They're 13-2 in the division in the last handful of years. And albeit, and we've talked about this, is I've compared winning the AFC South to being TCU in the playoffs. I mean, that's, you know, you make the playoffs just because you win your division. I mean, it's the NFC North and the AFC South right there. Or this year, I guess it's the NFC South as well.
NFC South is brutal.
Right. They're on the verge of their 3rd straight AFC South championship, and they're on the verge of their 4th straight playoff game. So, again, it brings up the question, is it about winning the AFC South or is it about competing for Super Bowl championships? And then I went back and looked at John Robinson's body of work. And that's fair. I mean, if you know, it is fair. You know, he's in a high-profile position. He understands the expectations, and he understands what goes into this. What I did, though, is from his drafts from 2016 on, I went back to NFL.com and looked at how everybody ranked his drafts from 2016.com. And if my kids brought home these grades, I'd be pretty happy. You know, the 2016 draft, which brought in Conklin, Henry, and Byard. You know, Conklin obviously went on to the Browns, but he was an all-pro his first year here. B-plus draft.
Two cornerstones of the team still.
If you get Derrick Henry and Kevin Byard on your team and they're still here 7 years later, that's pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are, without question, leaders both on the team and in the community. 2017 draft, A-. That's the Corey Davis draft. And I could go back and forth on my thoughts on Corey Davis, but Corey Davis had a couple good seasons here, and for what they did, he was a good receiver. He was a good blocker. He's a big body type guy, and either a year or two ago, he was ranked in the top 100 players in the NFL, you know, according to the players. 2018 draft, he got an A, and they brought in Rashawn Evans, Harold Landry were the key pieces in that draft. Evans, again, another one. I mean, brought in when they needed some help at linebacker, had a good 2019, had a good 2020 season, and he's gone on to free agency and currently with the Falcons. The issue is none of these guys have gone on to the second contract, none of the high-ranked draft picks.
That's one of the big critiques.
I know. Mm-hmm. The 2019 draft brought in, obviously, Jeffrey Simmons, brought in David Long, brought in some really, really good players, brought in some offensive linemen, and Jeffrey Simmons is on the verge of becoming one of the top players in the NFL right now. So I think, you know, that draft was graded an A by NFL.com. The 2020 draft, that's the Isaiah Wilson draft. You know, that great, you know, and I heard you guys talking about in the previous part with Teron. I mean, by all accounts, Isaiah Wilson, not just by John Robinson, but by most NFL executives, was a high first-round pick who had a great career at Georgia and was a very, very good player. Now, the thing that's hard to measure whether it's college recruiting, which I've done for a long, long time, or pro evaluation, is there's players that love football, and there's players that love what football does for them. And Isaiah, I don't know Isaiah Wilson. I know the story. I know what's gone on. And Isaiah Wilson now 2 years later is out of football, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
You know, the 2021 draft, that's the Caleb Farley draft. That's
brutal draft.
It is, but Monty Rice, Molden, Weaver, McMath. I mean, there's players in that draft that are on the team. Are they superstars? I think the question, as everybody said, is your first-round picks are supposed to be your best players, and there's hardly any of these guys remaining. And jury's still out on Farley, but when he's about to have a third back surgery and has had five surgeries over the last few years, it seems to me as if those are problems. You know, the guy's talented. He's long. He's athletic. You know, he played at Virginia Tech. He played a very high level. But you know, he's injury prone. You know, he's not durable. I mean, that's the truth.
And the problem with Caleb Farley was, you know, sometimes you draft guys that have a ton of talent and they continue to get injured. And that's just unfortunate. But the critique for John Robinson on Caleb Farley was that he was injured coming into the season.
That's right.
He was out the 2021 season. He came in after a back surgery. And injured players, unfortunately, stay injured. And it was a move that a lot of us looked at from the outside looking in. Like, what are you doing?
And looking back, that was one of the things on Davis in the 2017 draft. The receiver from Western Michigan was injured coming into the draft. And this draft looks to be – I mean, in this draft, you have Burks, you have McCreary, you know, you have Willis. Now, you could make a debate on what Malik Willis is right now. He's a player that went to Auburn and couldn't beat out Jarrett Stidham. He went to Liberty and had a great two-year experience under Hugh Freeze at Liberty, but there aren't a lot of Hugh Freeze-developed quarterbacks that go on to great success in the NFL. It's sort of a system-type deal where the quarterbacks can't help but be productive. And, you know, the question is Malik Willis a novelty? You know, he's a change-up quarterback who goes in on third and short and on special situations, or is he the guy who's going to develop into your future star quarterback? And to me, that's somewhat still to be determined.
That.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of questions about this draft. But you also got Hassan Haskins, you got Okwonkwo. I mean, so you have some players in this draft that are pretty good players. So, I mean, you look at that. But this draft will obviously be known as the A.J. Brown draft. I mean, that's what this draft will be known for. We basically traded A.J. Brown and drafted Treylon Burks. And that's where we stand. So, I mean, you can make decisions on whether the free agents that he signed, you know, the Clowney one's always a question. But I think going back, people would do that again. The Bud Dupree, I mean, Dupree's a good football player, in my opinion. He's got to stay healthy, and he's got other issues. The Julio Jones, I mean, you know, you watch the Julio Jones in his prime, he's a real deal player. He's getting a little older. He'd missed a lot of time with the Falcons prior to this. But I'm sure they did their homework, and that was a questionable free agency hire as well. But boy, I think you said it in the last segment with Teron. I think the Titans are a lot better today than they were when he took over. I do think that. And I think that the stakes are higher now. I think whoever got into the ownership's ear said, listen, you know, the optics weren't good the last 2 weeks, losing to the Bengals at home. Mm-hmm. And then A.J. Brown, to your point, having the type of game that he had the other day, catching the ball over Avery, catching the ball over Fulton. It just looked bad. And the Eagles dominated in every way, and someone said, that's the type of team we should be. You know, you got a mobile quarterback, you got Miles Sanders, you got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, you got a good third down running back, you got Quez Watkins in the slot, you got good tight ends, you got guys up front who can rush the quarterback. The optics just weren't good on a nationally televised game, and really the Titans got blown out of the water.
And I think I don't think anyone would dispute that John Robinson has done a lot of good things for this team. I mean, they were 3-13 when John Robinson took over as general manager. So with all of the good things combined with some inevitable bad picks, I mean, 2020 Isaiah Wilson, 2021 Caleb Farley, bringing in Julio Jones was just a bad move. You could even look at bringing in Robert Woods for $10 million a year, and the amount of balls that he's dropped throughout this season have been bad moves. And I think all points on John Robinson's resume that you would look to and say, okay, maybe that is deserving of firing. But in the middle of this season, to all the good things that you said that he has done, unfortunately, you've been in the position where mid-season, you're the fall guy.
I'm here now.
And we're happy to have you. But how do you think this went down?
Well, to that point, I do think you just hit on a couple things. I think John Robinson identified the problems. Isaiah Wilson, I mean, they know they needed help on the offensive line. Now, you can't control that Ben Jones is going to get hurt, Taylor Lewan is going to get hurt. You can't control certain things like that. They drafted Isaiah Wilson, who at the time, you know, there wasn't anybody saying, boy, you better watch out for this guy. I mean, it just ended up happening that way. And sometimes when you put a lot of money into a young person's pocket, all of a sudden things change. I mean, we're learning that in the college football world. At least I learned it the hard way with the NILs and things like that. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, there's those that love football, and there's those that love what football does for them. And he identified the receiver situation, whether it was Julio a year ago, whether it was Treylon Burks this year. I mean, again, A.J. Brown is one of, I think, the most explosive players in the NFL. I would have done what was necessary to keep him on my roster. And he's identified the situation. I think the front seven on the defense is really good. I think you can win with that front seven. I think the safety position with Adams and Byard is really good. I think the corner position, I don't know that there's an elite corner on the roster. And I think that got exposed again the other day with Fulton, with Avery, with McCreary. They all had their moments where I call it CSI. They were there to identify the body instead of making a play on the football. And we tried to address it. It tried to be addressed with Farley, and it just hasn't worked. So the problems were identified. It just may not have been the right solution. And if it's not the right solution, you're a person in John Robinson's position. He understands there's consequences to those type of things. And I always feel bad in these situations because I've been in the coaching profession for 35 years. I've seen the good, I've seen the bad, and I've seen the ugly. And how did it go down? Who knows? And I've heard people.
What do you think?
I think the optics on Sunday were bad. I think like Teron was saying, I think it was a series of unfortunate events. And then on Sunday to lose like they did on TV and have AJ have the type of game that he had might have been the final straw in a series of events. But to say the owner didn't know about the trade on the draft day, I don't agree with that. I mean, I know when
she was in the draft room.
I know when they drafted Jeffrey Simmons, I was the defense coordinator at Mississippi State, and Jeffrey had had some issues before he entered Mississippi State. And I know she was involved in every step of the way on that. So she's smart. Nothing's going to happen that she's not aware of. So to say that, that's not right. I just think the people that have her ear saw a flawed roster. And, again, I think they might be playing chess when the rest of us are playing checkers, because really to make a change at that position now, isn't going to have a significant effect on the remainder of the regular season with the players, and may put you in a position where you can get, the interviews immediately after the season, get the evaluations at the Senior Bowl, at the Shrine Game, at the different All-Star games, get the players' individual workouts, get to the combine, things like that, and not spend as, be ahead of the game as far as replacing your general manager and your personnel department.
And you mentioned that Amy Adams-Drunk said the roster is just not good enough. But there were two roster moves in particular that have been pointed out by two national talking heads, and I want to get Coach Bob Shoup's thoughts on that coming up next. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063, The Game.
Oh, do I love Edley's Barbecue. That's right. Did you know Edley's Barbecue? And Edley's Barbecue is my barbecue choice. In fact, when I go to Edley's, it's too bad. Like, I should be able to tell you all about how great the menu is, but I love their wings so much because they're so meaty and juicy and tender. I get the buffalo. I get the barbecue sauce on them sometimes. Get a little of that, Nashville hot sauce. It's just, it's fabulous. That it's like, as soon as I'm there, I'm like, let me get those wings because they're so meaty. But really, everything I've ever had from Edley's is fantastic, especially their scratch-made sides, family style, and a little mac and cheese is fabulous, as well as that pudding. Oh, goodness gracious. And if you're going to the game, let Edley's take care of the tailgate prep. Easily take smoked pulled pork, brisket, turkey, scratch-made sides, family style. Edley's is perfect for game day at home or at the stadium. So call your neighborhood Edley's or visit edleysbbq.com. Edley's Barbecue, voted Nashville's best barbecue 4 years in a row. edleysbbq.com.
Look, I continue to maintain. Power struggle, Vrabel won.
Yeah.
A.J.
Like
Brown.
That. Right.
Catalyst. Because, Chris, they've done nothing to put out any other story. There's been no effort to push back against those of us who would say, well, they didn't see eye to eye. Mike Vrabel's won enough games that he's got the juice now. And between Julio Jones, because I don't know what other disagreements they've had, but I guarantee you Mike Vrabel didn't want Julio Jones in Tennessee. Right. That wasn't his call, as evidenced by the fact that he was nowhere to be seen or heard from when they made that trade. And he was vindicated. A.J. Brown, we know, we have the visual evidence, clear and obvious, that Mike Vrabel was not happy that A.J. Brown was traded. And on Sunday, he was vindicated. Chris, I think it's as simple as they get their asses kicked by A.J. Brown and the Eagles on Sunday. On Monday, Amy Adams-Strunk decides John Robinson's got to go, but I'll sleep on it. And she did. And Tuesday morning, John Robinson went. And there has been nothing no effort whatsoever by the Titans to tell anyone who may be saying that they're off base. So we're on base. We are right on the money. Sometimes the simplest explanation is the right one. More often than not, the simplest explanation is the right one. And the simplest explanation here is Vrabel versus Robinson. Vrabel 1, Robinson 0.
There you go. That was Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk yesterday. Caroline Fenton, Adam Vingan in for Jared Stillman. Coach Bob Shoop joins us now. So Mike Florio says it could be as simple as there was a power struggle between Mike Vrabel and John Robinson. That there were two moves in particular that John Robinson made that Mike Vrabel didn't agree with. One, the Julio Jones trade, which I would agree that I don't think Mike Vrabel was on board with it from the beginning. The whole "don't do dumb stuff to hurt the team" quote came from Mike Vrabel talking about Julio Jones against the Arizona Cardinals in the first game last season. But Mike Florio also mentions that it was so clear and so obvious that Mike Vrabel was against trading A.J. Brown. Now, I'm not disputing that Mike Vrabel might have been against trading A.J. Brown. I just didn't see the clear and obvious evidence that everyone else is seeing about Mike Vrabel not agreeing with the A.J. trade. I mean, yes, he looked nervous in the draft room that night that they traded A.J. Brown, too understandable. Yes, he had a fairly monotone, you know, press conference after that move was made, which is not something that is out of the ordinary for Mike Vrabel. So Mike Florio cites AJ and Julio. And it also was reverberated in Monday Morning Quarterback. Albert Breer was asked about the move. Why fire John Robinson? Albert Breer also reiterates, it's a partnership between two alphas, Vrabel and Robinson. There was clear and public disagreement over the A.J. Brown trade and the deal for Julio Jones, in which Vrabel got a player who was physically was not able to practice, and it rubbed against the culture that Vrabel built to. So we're hearing from both Mike Vrabel and Albert Breer that Mike Vrabel was very obviously and openly against the A.J. and Julio moves. What do you make of that? What do you make of Albert Breer reporting that?
There are power struggles at the high school football level, the college football level, and the pro football level. And that's the age-old debate about the personnel department, general manager, and the coaching staff. You know, the personnel department picks the groceries, as Bill Parcells said, and the coaching staff's job is to, you know, develop the players and put them in position to be successful on the field. And I'm not going to debate, and I don't have any inside information is that there was a disagreement or an agreement with regard to the signing of Julio Jones or the trading of A.J. Brown. I could tell you from a coaching perspective, when I was surprised that the Titans signed Julio Jones. It seemed like they were paying for the Julio Jones of 4 or 5 years ago. He had had injuries the previous year in Atlanta. He hadn't been as productive recently. I didn't see the need, you know, with an A.J. Brown. I mean, I just didn't see that on the 2021 roster, and I don't think we got the productivity. He missed a significant amount of practice time. I remember in training camp, he was hardly practicing at all, if at all, once they signed him. And it's just a series of things. And one of the things you talk about as a coach all the time is your culture in the building. And sometimes it's hard to measure, and sometimes you get burned by it because you don't know till someone's in the building that they're bad or against the culture. Because Julio Jones, by all accounts, I still remember talking to Jeremy Pruitt when he's the head coach at Tennessee, and he was at Alabama when Julio was there, and he always said that Julio was the best athlete that he'd ever seen. He said if Julio Jones had played corner, he'd have been the best corner at Alabama. So, jeez. I mean, but again, that's Julio Jones at a certain age and a certain time in his career, not Julio Jones at a later time. And even this year, he hasn't been. He made a nice catch in the Monday night game the other night on the touchdown drive at the end, but it's not like he's been a significantly major contributor to some explosive Tampa Bay offense. Now, the A.J. trade, I think the difficulty now is on draft night, we have cameras everywhere, and we have microphones everywhere. So we got the instant reaction of Mike Vrabel when the trade went down, or what we think was Mike Vrabel's reaction when the trade went down. If I were Mike Vrabel and if I were a coach and my perceived most explosive athlete was traded and we were bringing in a first-round draft pick, albeit and potentially a good one in Treylon Burks, but he doesn't have the equity or the experience of an A.J. Brown. I think A.J. Brown is a top-flight level wide receiver in the NFL
who
deserves to be talked about in that manner. Having gone against him in college and having watched his pro career, I think he's the real, real deal. So it didn't in any way, shape, or form surprise me that the head coach reacted the way he did. But things like that happen all the time. And to add A plus B and get to suddenly C, there's a little bit of a stretch there. I think it's what we talked about. I think, you know, you watch the last 2 weeks, the Bengals come in and beat the Titans at their own game, and then you watch the Eagles, you know, really dominate and expose so many of the weaknesses of the Titans roster. I mean, they rushed the quarterback up front. They stopped the run. You know, when Burks got out, the next best answer was Okwonkwo. I mean, they couldn't even put in another receiver at that particular point. A.J. Brown, like I said, having the game that he had against Fulton, against Avery, against McCreary, the optics were bad, and the people who I think have ownership's ear probably said, this roster's flawed, we need to make a move. You know, let's do it at the end of the year. And, well, you know, if you do it at the end of the year, it's going to put us behind as far as scouting for the Senior Bowl, as far as player interviews, as far as the combine. You know, it really shouldn't affect the team now. You know, we're in position that we're probably going to – it's like some of the GIFs and memes I've seen on Twitter. The Titans are going to go they're going to be the 4 seed. Let's face it. That's what they are. They're going to be the 4th seed in the playoffs, however this thing plays out. And Mike Vrabel will have this team ready to play on Sunday, and he'll have them ready to play the rest of the year. Jeffrey Simmons said it best. He's tired of answering questions about John Robinson. He just wants to go out on the field and play.
And I don't blame him. I mean, and that's what is so puzzling to me about the timing, is that this is an organization that so notoriously blocks out the noise, doesn't want any distraction, that this is an organization that is you get to work, you do your job, all focus is on the next game at hand. So for this organization to fire a general manager in the middle of the season, that's undoubtedly a distraction. So the timing is puzzling.
And John Robinson and Coach Vrabel come from the Patriots, you know, model. You know, that's where their influences come from. That's where their mentors have come from, which is the, you know, no distractions, do your job concept. And as I said, I think when we sign up for this as coaches, when we sign up for this as NFL executives, we understand it's a result-oriented industry. And you could make a debate as to what the results have been. You know, like I said, the 9th best record in the NFL since Robinson took over, 12-3 record, a 13-2 record against your division in the last handful of years. You're about to get your third straight division title. Those are good results, but maybe, just maybe, the bar's been raised a little bit higher, and what's expected here is to compete for Super Bowl championships.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Bob Shoup joins us in studio. But coming up next, what does this mean for the long-term and short-term future of the Tennessee Titans? Plus, what has Bob seen from the Jacksonville Jaguars? There is a game this Sunday. We'll get into that coming up next. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game. Coach Bob Shoup joins us in studio now. Bob, I understand that John Robinson doesn't have the same face-to-face, day-to-day communication with the players as a coordinator or as Mike Vrabel might. But with firing John Robinson in the middle of the season, what message does that send to the players?
I don't know if a player would take it such that it sent a message to them as it sends a message, as I think it should, to the fan base and maybe the people in the organization, that our objective isn't to win the AFC South. Our objective isn't to host a single, you know, playoff game each year. Our objective is to build a team that's going to compete for championships. And that's the only thing I can come up with. You know, I think I can only use the analogy from a college experience. You know, firing the general manager will be the equivalent of firing, you know, the recruiting coordinator, the director of football operations. I think there's an amount of, geez, I feel bad for J-Rob. Mm-hmm. But the players just move forward, and business is business. And they understand that. And John Robinson understands that. He may not agree with it, but he understands what he signed up for. But in pro football, to a certain extent, every single player that's on that roster, every single player that's on the practice squad, he is responsible for them being a pro football player in some way, shape, or form. And as I said, it's a result-oriented business. And I just think the stakes have been raised a little bit.
And I'm looking specifically at Coach Bob Shoup is with us, at Treylon Burks. Because the optics of the firing and the timing don't look great. That 2 days later, after John Robinson 2 days before John Robinson gets fired, the Titans get their butts handed to them by the Philadelphia Eagles, and most notably by the guy that John Robinson just traded.
Yeah.
And the guy that gets drafted in his place, you know, he catches a ball in the end zone, a great catch, gets knocked unconscious. The Titans go on to lose that game, and then the GM gets fired after, you know, getting lit up by A.J. Brown. The optics of that are not very good. So if you're Treylon Burks, what do you think?
The optics were bad, no question. A.J. having the game that he had, and, he literally jumped over a guy to catch one ball. He ran a double move on another guy and left him laying on the ground. I mean, there were things
dirty
that made it look ugly. Yeah. I mean, it did look ugly. But the catch Burks made provided a significant amount of hope to Titan fans, I thought. I thought it was a great catch, a great ball, a great catch in traffic for a touchdown. And make no mistake, Treylon Burks is worthy of being a first-round pick, and the jury's still out on him. I mean, he's had injury problems that have prevented him from being the very best version of himself. Mm-hmm. But let's let it play out. My concern was when he went out that they couldn't put wide receiver number three or four in the game, Hollister or Board or whoever there is. They've elevated McMath this week a little bit and see what he does. And, again, other than Woods and those – none of those guys really put the fear of God into a defensive coordinator. There's not a great amount. I mean, the next best weapon is the screen pass to Henry or a swing pass to Hilliard or Hooper maybe. Or when you're using a Kwonkwo in your third down package in position for Woods and you're moving Woods outside and you're juggling things, I just didn't think, you know, from the middle of the second quarter on, you know, there was a significant amount of pass threat from the Titans that they exhibited on Sunday.
There really hasn't been much of a pass threat for the Titans at all this season. And Treylon Burks has found his footing later on in the season, and he has emerged as a guy that you have to pay attention to. You cannot leave him undefended. But to your point, without Treylon Burks, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine and Robert Woods, who drops a ball every single game, if not more, and Chika Okonkwo, a promising-looking rookie, but a rookie nonetheless, doesn't necessarily scare you.
No. Again, I mean, if you're going 1 through 32 in the NFL, that's probably not an upper-level group right there. And isn't, as I said, no defensive coordinators altering his coverages and things along those lines in an effort to double one of those guys, for sure. They can single cover those guys. They can bring some pressure. They can do those type of things. And that just, again, exposes some of the flaws that are currently on the Titans roster.
Coach Bob Shoup is with us. What's your take on the Jags?
Like I said, I feel very confident. The Titans have won the games they're supposed to win, and they've probably lost the games that, if you were looking at the betting lines and things like that, that they were not favored to win. That's the truth of the matter,
that,
if you really look
at
it.
That is the theme of the season,
I mean,
so far.
They are who they are. So, I mean, you know, currently, 2 weeks ago when they beat the Bengals, I mean, we were jacked. I mean, when they beat the Packers, I mean, we were excited. They won the Thursday night game. They won up there. They went up to Lambeau, and they won the game. Things are looking great. And 2 weeks later, your best wide receiver's hurt. You fire the GM. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're in panic mode.
Life comes at you fast, doesn't it?
Yeah. The Colts are off this week. So they can't, I don't think, clinch the division this week. But if they beat the Jags, I mean, they're basically in position. You know, the bottom would have to fall out not to be the four seed. And the Jags are coming to town, and they've played well recently. They had a good win over the Ravens. They got trucked by the Lions last weekend. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence has got a toe injury, but he's a really talented player. He's got a 92.5 QBR, 17 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. When I look at their pass game, the thing that caught my attention today was they only have 2 receivers that average over 10 yards a catch. So it's a lot of short ball game. They have Marvin Jones, they have Christian Kirk, who I think is an outstanding player, mm-hmm. and they have another guy named Zay Jones, tight end who's a really good receiver, and Evan Engram. You know, but none of those guys are averaging, you know, more than, you know, 11, 12 yards a catch. ATN out of the backfield is a really good receiver and also a very good player. The thing that caught my attention is of their top 7 rushers running the football, ATN averages 5.4 yards a carry, and they all average over 4.2 yards a carry. So they're a team that can run the ball a little bit. And they're a little inconsistent on defense. I don't think they have any game wreckers or game changers on the defensive side of the ball. Give a shout-out to my alma mater. The leading tackler happens to be a Yale Bulldog, by the way, which is incredible.
Let's go Dogs!
Foye, I'm going to butcher his name, but Foye Olukuan. And their other really good player is Devin Lloyd at linebacker. Mm-hmm. Those two inside linebackers, they're two leading tacklers. And guys that I'm very, very well aware of in the secondary that I think are really good players are Andre Sisco, their safety, who has 3 interceptions. He's from Syracuse in college. He was a turnover magnet. and he's got three interceptions for him this year. And Tyson Campbell, their corner from Georgia, who is really in a position that in I think he's about to develop and evolve into one of the top corners in the league. And if for the Nashville people, if you're really excited about this game, the two wild cards for you are, you know, if Lawrence can't go with a toe injury, C.J. Beathard being the quarterback, and C.J. obviously from here, and I think he went to BGA if I'm not mistaken. And one of the starting corners for the Jacksonville Jaguars is Trey Herndon, someone that I recruited to Vanderbilt, and it really was out of the Chattanooga area, kind of a not a lowly recruited player, but wasn't a real highly recruited player, developed into a super player for us, and has gone on to a great career in the NFL. So those are two people that the Nashville fans might want to keep an eye out for on Sunday.
And if it is C.J. Beathard, I mean, T's and P's, to thoughts and prayers to the Jacksonville Jaguars. But let's assume Trevor Lawrence is in on Sunday. I don't know if that's going to necessarily be the case, but you are the head coach of the Titans. What's your game plan to get a win against Jacksonville this Sunday?
You know, when I looked at the numbers, you know, technically, it's funny. You look at the Titans' offense. They're 26th in the NFL in points per game now, 29th in total offense. They're 15th in rush offense, which you would think they'd be a little bit higher, but the last two games have really, you know, kind of brought them down. And they're 30th in the NFL in pass offense right now. As I said, the Jacksonville defense is middle of the road in most every category. So I don't see a whole lot of changing the game plan on offense. I think it's established the run, you know, with Derrick Henry, you know, trying to win at the line of scrimmage, trying to play bully ball to a certain extent, and then finding a way to you know, with the play actions, throwing the ball down the field deep. I still, as I've said for 3 weeks now, I love the play actions with the slip screens that they do to Derrick Henry in space. Get the ball to your game changers in space. And right now, you know, he's a game changer. Treylon was becoming a game changer. I think Hilliard's a game changer as a third down 3D running back right there. I think he does a great job. The tight ends are all, you know, Hoop, get the ball to Hooper, get the ball to Okwonkwo. And like I said,
stop giving the ball to Jeff Swaim.
Yeah, don't, you know, I'm not going to get into that debate with Jared, but they got to move the chains. They got to do a much better job. And on defense, like I said, I think the front seven's going to be fine. You know, they've done such a good job stopping the run this year. The third in the league in run defense. The Jacksonville does bring the ninth best running offense in the league. And like I said, they've got to get off the field on third down. They've got to do a great job in the red zone, and they can't give up any explosive plays. They've got to do a great job on the perimeter. But I just don't see Jacksonville having the explosive receivers like A.J. Brown. As I said, you know, only one of the wide receivers that they have is actually currently, you know, averaging over 10 yards a catch. So to me, that demonstrates not a very explosive offense, but more of a methodical offense, which fits right into the Titans game.
And I do look at Jacksonville. I think it's a team with a lot of young talent. And yeah, I think under Doug Peterson, it's a team that will improve, I think. They're just not quite there yet.
And you just hit on the head. I think you're hitting on the head what the ownership's looking at. They're looking at, you know, this team is what it is. There's not going to be any significant changes made between now and Sunday or now and the end of the year. They're going to help us win the Super Bowl this year. But moving forward, you know, is it a flawed roster? Do we want to, it's like when you bring in an offensive coordinator who runs a certain offense, but then all of a sudden you go in another direction and say, well, maybe this isn't the offense that we want to run. Maybe we want to run a little bit of a different offense. Well, maybe we want to go in a different direction as far as the design and the construction of the team right now. And maybe that has to do with doing a better job on the offensive line, finding more explosive players at the receiver position, and being able to cover on the perimeter on defense. And those are still the things that I see that are flaws in the roster for these guys. But I don't see the Jacksonville Jaguars being in a position that they can expose those flaws like the Eagles did and a week ago, like the Bengals did up front, exposing the Titans' offensive line a little bit.
And you mentioned two areas in which the Titans need to inevitably improve: the offensive line and in the backfield, the defensive backfield. Coincidentally, those are two positions that John Robinson tried to address with bad draft picks in Isaiah Wilson and Caleb Farley.
And that's what we said. We said, I mean, he identified the problem, and it's just a matter of debating whether it was the correct solution or not. I mean, you know, Joe Fan out on the street can identify the problem if he watches the games and can say, you know, we need to be better on the offensive line. That's what John Robinson, and that's what any NFL executive gets paid to make those decisions. And I'll say it again, when in 2020, when Isaiah Wilson was drafted, I didn't hear a lot of complaining. And I think there's a lot of other NFL executives who would have taken Isaiah Wilson with the 29th pick in the draft. Caleb Farley, I didn't know as much about and did a little bit of research afterwards. But the injury thing is what really has me concerned about him. Where he can go with this is the knees, the back. You've got to be big, strong, and durable. The NFL is a big man's league.
Coming up next, there is a historic tradition and storied honor that I just can't believe in anymore. And I want to get Bob Shoup's thoughts on that coming up next. Stillman & Company. Coach Bob Shoup is with us, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Coach Bob Shoup joins us now. Coach, I am upset because there was a system that I used to believe in. There was a tradition that I thought used to mean something. And now I'm not so sure because with the Heisman Trophy finalists, C.J. Stroud, Max Duggan, Stetson Bennett, and Caleb Williams, I think it is criminal that Blake Corum didn't get the invite to New York City, that Hendon Hooker didn't get the invite to New York City, that Bryce Young, even though he'll have an invite because he won last year, is not in contention for the Heisman. You cannot tell me that anything Stetson Bennett has done this season is more deserving of a Heisman over those three. What Stetson Bennett has done this year is good. He's a good player, no doubt. I don't want to take away from what he's doing. I just can't believe in the Heisman Trophy anymore.
He's the Taylor Heineke of college football. I mean, he makes his team better.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And you know, what he's done in the last 2 years as the starting quarterback at Georgia, having won all of his regular season games, having led him to the SEC championship this year, and having led him to the national championship last year is off the charts good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we have a saying in the coaching, you know, when we evaluate our personnel, it's do you win because of him? Do you win with him? Or you win despite him? And to me, he's a win with. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. And his story's awesome. And I saw him play at the junior college level. And his story's incredible. And it makes for good television. But I don't think he's one of the best four players in the country. I think you can go down the line of SEC quarterbacks, and he may not be the fourth best quarterback in the SEC. I think Hendon Hooker and Blake Corum had years that were deserving of being a Heisman finalist. I don't know that much about Max Duggan, but he wasn't even the starting quarterback at TCU at the beginning of the year. Chandler Morris gets hurt.
And he played his butt off in the Big 12 championship.
And that was really impressive. Mm-hmm. I think those are good stories and will make for good television. I think the Heisman Trophy winner is going to be Caleb Williams. I think he's probably exhibited himself as the best player in college football this year. He could do it all, and he's going to be a high, high round draft pick and has an incredible future.
And am I wrong to think that the Heisman Trophy is going down a very dangerous path of it is now just either the quarterback or the best player of the best team in the country?
Yes, that's a little bit alarming. But, I mean, the quarterback is the most high-profile position in all of sport, no
Absolutely.
Question about that. And I'm not sitting here saying that those guys aren't deserving of some type of recognition and opportunity. But I do think, you know, if we're doing this realistically, I don't think I would suggest that Stetson Bennett and Max Duggan are not two of the four best players in the country.
Coach Bob Shoup, we appreciate you for stopping by. We'll chat with you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. It is now time for Predators Game Day.
It's Hockey Night in Smashville.
Deflects back for Duchene. His shot stopped. And the score!
What are the keys to victory tonight? What's being said in the locker room? Where do the Preds reside in the Central Division standings? Jared Stillman has the latest now with Preds Game Day on Stillman & Company. This is Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
The Predators are on the road in Tampa Bay, taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight at 6 o'clock. That's why we were out a little bit early, but the Predators sitting at 12-9-2, good for 26 points. The Predators are now sitting at fifth place in the Central Division. They are 1 point behind the Avalanche with one game in hand. And also looking at the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're 15-9-1, good for 31 points, 8-4-1 so far on the season at home. The Lightning are sitting at fourth place in the Eastern Conference. They are tied with the Red Wings with no games in hand. So looking tonight, it is the dad's trip in Tampa Bay. This was John Hines earlier on the trip for the Predators.
You know, it's special for, not everyone has the opportunity to get to this level. And I think most, you know, for everyone, their parents are a big factor in guiding them throughout their life. And for the dads to be able to come in and get to know some of the, you know, the players that they enjoy watching, but, you know, seeing their son's daily life and seeing what their life is like, it's special. So we've had a good time so far. And now we get a win, it'll make it a better time.
There you go. Nice little dad strip for the Predators. A couple things to watch tonight. UC Saros in the last month has 6 wins since November 12th. He is 6-0-1 with a 9-3 save percentage in the last 7 games. Again, won 6 of those last 7. UC Saros has been on an absolute heater. And if we have seen anything from this team, they absolutely feed off of the energy of UC Saros. Also, Philip Forsberg is 9 points from becoming the 3rd player in team history to reach the 500-point milestone, which will be a difficult thing for Philip Forsberg going up against this hot, hot Tampa Bay Lightning team. But you can catch all of the game preview coming up next. Max Herz with the Predators pregame show. We will be back tomorrow at 2:00.